Good afternoon. Welcome to the Peter Mac Show. Thanks for tuning in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Today is Sunday, September 23rd. My special guest today with me is Dr. Robert Epstein. He is a PhD from Harvard University, former editor-in-chief of Psychology Today. He is a contributing editor of Scientific American Mind and has several other noteworthy features of him. But the reason I asked him to come on today is because he's the author of a book which I found just fascinating called The Case Against Adolescence, Rediscovering the Adult in Every Teen. So, Dr. Epstein, are you there? Dr. Epstein, this is Peter. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay. I'm sorry. I'm having to reach you over the phone today. We had a little technical difficulty, so I just gave a brief introduction there. Am I pronouncing your name correctly?
Well, I say Epstein, but
Epstein, I'm sorry.
Either way is okay.
Okay, Epstein.
Just think Einstein with an F.
That's how it's spelled with the German pronunciation would be Epstein.
Right.
Well, very good. Well, I just told people about little bit about your background, and that, of course, the reason for having you on today is that you're the author of this book that I just find fascinating called The Case Against Adolescence, Rediscovering the Adult in Every Teen. And basically the thesis of the book is that this prevailing belief that we've had all along that adolescence is this sort of natural growth between childhood and adulthood is hasn't been around forever, right?
Exactly, and I was surprised myself to learn that because I'm a father of four children, and I actually got interested in this observing one of my own teenage sons, and I naturally thought this was some universal idea and that adolescence always existed and that there was no way you could avoid it, and that's what I knew, that's what I learned,
right?
Growing up. It turns out it's completely wrong, and it's actually a very dangerous stage of life that we've created, and it should not exist. There's no reason for it to exist at all.
Right. And we all, of course, experience the teenage years, and we look at people, and you have lots of statistics in your book to back up that this is a turbulent time for American teenagers, but then your book also shows quite clearly that there are other cultures around the world in whom teenagers do not experience this kind of turbulence that they do here, at least in North America, and that seems to be related to the notion that we've adopted here that there really is this biologically based adolescent period, right?
Exactly. It turns out that there are more than 100 cultures around the world where there is no teen turmoil whatsoever, none. No conflict with parents, no teen depression, no teen drug abuse. Think of all of the problems we have. There are actually more than 100 cultures around the world which have none of those problems, not even one.
Right.
And I another thing that shocked me when I was researching this, I show in the book that where our practices enter a culture, you can create Western-style adolescence almost overnight. You can create it easily within 10 years where it never existed before.
Right, that's fascinating. Well, take us back, if you would. As you said, you were taught, like I was, that this is a natural phenomena, and we're going to talk as we get further into the show about the work of G. Stanley Hall and so forth. But take us back to really where or when and how adolescence got started in this country. You say it's really the creation of modern industrialization that got started in somewhere between 1880 and 1920?
Correct, yeah, really started after the Civil War.
Right. We have to do a quick commercial here for the music. So hold that thought, and we'll be right back, folks, with Dr. Robert Epstein in just a minute.
Do you know that you can go solar for under $1,200 now? Hi, this is Ken Solar. As you may have heard by now, I've been designing alternative energy packages for over a decade. The solar power generators that I produce will get you all the solar power you need for your household essentials. Your refrigerator, your freezer, lights, fans, electric blankets, TV, radio, clocks, phones, computers, and a lot more. No gas, no fumes, and they're totally silent. Each solar power generator comes complete with everything you'll need, including the solar panel, a 3,000-watt peak inverter, a step-by-step quick setup sheet, and battery backup. I reached that point in my life where I just didn't want to have to rely on everyone else anymore. You know, power companies, government. Anyway, getting yourself free from the utility grid is a lot easier than you might think. Are you ready to go solar? Give me a call now at 239-677-3073 or order them on my website at a 10% discount on kensolar.com. That's kensolar.com.
Today's energy infrastructure is antiquated and fails to meet the needs and demands of its customers. Our Renewable Energy Solar Program is the first to give you the opportunity to adopt green energy in your home without having to make a huge investment. Our Renewable Energy Solar System converts sunlight directly into usable electricity where utility power and net metering are available. Our grid-connected solar electric system is designed to produce 100% of the energy consumed by you throughout the year that is allowed by net metering laws. It's finally affordable to go solar. There's no system to purchase, no installation costs, no maintenance fees, no permit hassles, no performance worries, and no rate increases. Reserve your system today. Call 866-276-3975. That's 866-276-3975. Or click on the web banner at RBN. Rethink solar and join the solution. Together, we can make a difference.
The Berkey Light's unique design combines the age-old process of microporous filtration coupled with modern state-of-the-art technology and the highest quality materials, bringing you the finest water filter available anywhere. The revolutionary Berkey Light, with its exclusive black Berkey filter elements, remove pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels. Harmful or unwanted chemicals are reduced to below detectable levels. And it reduces nitrates and unhealthy minerals like lead and mercury while leaving the nutritional minerals your body needs. Made of durable Lexan, the material used in making bulletproof glass, the system is durable, rugged, and yet attractive. The Berkey Light is transparent, so there is no guesswork when refilling the system. The water level is always visible. The rechargeable LED lighting system is beautiful as a nightlight and as necessary in emergency situations. Get the Berkey Light, the transparent water filter, for only $259.
Call today, 877-605-9200. That's 877-605-9200.
Okay, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Peter Mac Show. My special guest is Dr. Robert Epstein, and we're discussing his book, The Case Against Adolescence, and we were just about to talk about really how this notion of adolescence got started in this country. So, Dr. Epstein, if you want to pick up again with that thought, sorry for the interruption there.
Sure, and Peter, can we tell people that if they want to get information, even while they're listening, they can go to thecaseagainstadolescence.com?
Sure.
On the internet, and it's got some reviews of the book and some of the people who've endorsed the book. It's a pretty amazing list. It's people like Dr. Joyce Brothers, famous psychotherapist Albert Ellis, who just passed away. M. Scott Peck, the psychiatrist, actually endorsed the book shortly before he died.
Uh-huh, that's great. Yeah,
these people are so old who endorsed the book that probably they'll all be dead by the end of the year. But the point is,
right,
there are some people who've taken this very seriously.
Right. Well, let me just say this. I certainly have none of the stature of the people you just mentioned, but I think every parent needs to read this book because it's going to challenge a lot of ideas that have been, you know, inculcated in us through our culture and then, you know, in your case, in my case, through some formal education that we had, too.
Well, let me just emphasize, too, that I am a parent of four children. I mentioned that earlier. But that also that in researching this and doing survey research with one of my doctoral students, my own views were changed dramatically. So in other words, this is really not a book of my opinions about teens. This is a relentless look at data. I mean, it's 500 pages. It's a relentless look at data showing unequivocally that we've made a terrible mistake in the way we treat our teens and in creating this stage of life called adolescence. As for the history of it, yes, you're right. It started pretty much after the Civil War. Before the Civil War, there wasn't much in the way of a period of life called adolescence. And it was created by a number of forces, which I trace in the book, partly the women's movement, which was a good movement, but it had some side effects which were not so good.
Mm-hmm.
One of them it was that women who were just starting to get a little bit of power in the late 1800s in this country, of course, their natural tendency is to want to protect young people. Of course,
right.
I can understand that, want to protect children. And that was one factor leading to the what I call the artificial extension of childhood past puberty.
Right.
But also, it turns out that industrialization produced so many changes. It eliminated the apprentice system, which had been existed throughout human history in some sense or other.
Right.
And it led to the creation of unions. Just over a period of 20 years or so in the late 1800s, there were 37,000 strikes in the United States alone.
Wow.
Unionization was a very turbulent process.
Right.
And unions very quickly came to want to oust young people from the workplace.
Sure.
Because young people would work cheaper, and in many cases, a 13-year-old would displace his dad in a factory.
Right.
The dad would be earning more money. Of course, the unions were set up to try to protect jobs and protect salaries, and one of their highest agendas was to knock young people out of the workplace. Well, it's fine to want to protect dad's job, but it's absurd to deny young people the right to work, to do any sort of work at all, and that's
right.
what happened. So we had simultaneously three things occur. One was the creation of so-called child labor laws,
right,
which were struck down repeatedly by the courts for decades, and they were mainly driven by unions and some other forces. But basically pushing young people out of the workplace, not just the exploitative workplace, but out of all work entirely, which is crazy.
Right.
Number two was the creation of compulsory education laws. Of course, those things are connected, and in fact, some of the first laws that were created actually did both at the same time. They made school mandatory, and they prohibited young people from working. Again, doing any sort of work, even
right.
non-exploitative work. And then the third thing that happened was the creation of the juvenile justice system. This was created by women. They were all based in Chicago, as a matter of fact. In fact, a group of very formidable women in Chicago at a place called Hull House actually engineered all three types of laws, all three types of systems were created largely by one group of women, very mm-hmm. formidable women. They were upper middle class and upper class, very wealthy women who had all kinds of agendas, and one of them was to try to sweep all the new young immigrants off the streets. They were trying to impose their moral agenda on everyone, no matter what that person's background. And their idea behind the juvenile justice system was actually pretty good. It sounded good. They thought they could protect young people by putting them into special facilities which would be run by nurturing women. This was the concept.
Uh-huh.
And by protecting them from the real bad guys who were older, they could nurture them back into a moral life. That was the concept. Now, the juvenile justice system failed completely. That is, within a couple of decades, people realized that model doesn't work, and they really turned into prisons, very
right.
harsh prisons, even harsher than the regular prisons because they didn't have the resources that the regular criminal justice system had. The juvenile justice system also took away all constitutional rights from young people.
Right.
That was probably its main effect legally. It just totally took away all constitutional rights. So up until very recently, a young person who was swept up by the juvenile justice system did not have a right to a trial by jury. Actually, they still don't. Didn't have a right to counsel and so on and so forth. So it just took away all constitutional rights. Before that system was in place, there was one justice system, and no matter how young you were, when you committed a crime, you had full constitutional rights. So those are the three systems which basically resulted in what I call the artificial extension of childhood. They did two things. They took young people under a certain age, 18 or 21, And they infantilized them. They said, no, you're still a child, you're still a child, you're still a child, subjecting them to an incredible number of restrictions, not allowing them to join the adult world. And secondly, they isolated young people from adults, trapping them with each other, trapping them with their peers. And, of course, that remains the case to this day.
Sure.
Both of these things are extremely harmful. Infantilizing them and isolating from adults results in the creation of a new stage of life, so-called adolescence.
Yeah, that's just fascinating. I note here on page 63, you said even as early as the 1960s in many states, less than 5% of juvenile offenders were represented by counsel, no juries were allowed, and most hearings were held in secret. And, you know, of course, as adults, we would be appalled if that were to go on with adults, and yet that's going on, or perhaps still going on, at least up until, 40-some-odd years ago, was going on in this country.
Well, it is still going on, but to a somewhat lesser extent. There was a Supreme Court case, a landmark case in the 70s, called In Re Gault, G-A-U-L-T, in which finally the Supreme Court looked at one of these cases. It was a bizarre case in which a young man had made a prank phone call to a neighbor. She complained to the authorities. He was pulled in by the juvenile justice people. Basically, he was sentenced to years in a juvenile facility for making a prank call. But at the hearing itself, not only was there no jury and no lawyer, but the woman who made the complaint never even showed up. His parents weren't even notified.
Right.
And that's really the way the system has operated for 100 years. There have been some reforms, but basically that system needs to be abolished. That system is outrageous, and basically it violates the civil rights of millions of people based strictly on age. And I don't think age is a legitimate reason for denying someone civil rights. It would be the same as saying, well, you're over 65, therefore automatically we're going to take away your job.
Right.
No matter how competent you are. I think we've kind of gotten beyond that, at least at the high end of the age range.
Right. But we've sold that, haven't we, to, you know, people like me until I read your book, and if I understand you correctly, yourself, because it was done in the name of protection of children. We didn't want to have them experience, you know, if they're penalized for a most serious crime, being sent to prison where they're going to, you know, rub shoulders, so to speak, with serious felons and so forth. The idea was protecting them during this very vulnerable time in their life so that they wouldn't become hardened criminals. At least that's the case that was made, or that's what I believed.
Absolutely. That was the rationale, but if you look at the actual data, which I present in my book, it's had the opposite effect. Mm-hmm. That is to say, what it does is it traps very hardened criminal young people with other very hardened criminal young people.
Right.
Very bad role models. In facilities which have even fewer resources than regular prisons have, so some of these facilities are very, very harsh on young people. And there's an extremely high recidivism rate, and I quote studies, government and non-government studies in the book, including very recent studies, basically concluding that the juvenile justice system has been a complete failure. And as I say, when you look at it historically, you look at the people who created it and what their rationale was, if they were alive, they would be completely appalled. And I actually quote one of those women who in the 1930s went and visited some of these facilities, and she indeed was appalled that what we've created with that system was not what these women had in mind. And as a matter of fact, the justice system in general is set up to look at individuals and treat them as such and protect them when they need protecting.
Right. Well, hold on there. Hold that thought, please. We're due for another break. Folks, we'll be right back here with Dr. Epstein discussing his book, The Case Against Adolescence, in just a minute. Hang with us.
Mm-hmm. Have you heard of a privacy crisis? Odds are you're already immersed in one. The U.S. government is now legally tapping phones, monitoring emails, tracking purchases, and seizing property in record numbers. Banks are demanding invasive personal information for even the smallest transaction. Unfortunately, stalkers looking to harm you or your financial situation are using the same methods. So how can you protect yourself, your loved ones, and all that you own? Well, the first step is to purchase the most important how-to book you'll ever read. It's called Privacy Crisis by author Grant Hall. In minutes, you'll know the methods he himself has used and advised others about in order to bank anonymously, open a safety deposit box without a social security number. With Privacy Crisis, you'll discover how to avoid judgments, seal your credit files airtight, drop off the radar, and virtually disappear from those looking to cause you injury. The ebook and hardcover versions are available at www.privacycrisis.com. Grant Hall's Privacy Crisis contains information and legal methods the powers that be don't want you to know. Travel, bank, work, and live anonymously, live free. You can also order Privacy Crisis by telephone. Call 702-433-6222.
It is through the use of ritual that evil gets power. What do you think those people do at Bohemian Grove? It is ritual. They gather and perform ritual with evil intent. The more vile the ritual, the greater the evil that comes from it. This is done to spread their evil influence and control over our lives. Legend has it that the Knights Templar found the Holy Grail, and it was this that made them so powerful. Can we really believe they found the Holy Grail in their dig at the Temple of Solomon? What they most likely found was the occult knowledge of the greatest magician of all, Solomon. This is what turned the Templars from monks into masons. We, ordinary people, can use these same principles and empower ourselves to obtain protection and favors. The Bible is loaded with examples of how ritual was used by prophet and angel. Ritual prayer is an effective way of getting results. We can use it to bring positive results to one's family, community, and even nation. For more information and ordering on the book, The Power of Ritual Prayer, go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our web banner. Call 215-500-2972.
Eating a well-balanced diet filled with whole foods is sometimes hard to achieve, so supplementation can be beneficial. But WholeFoodToday.com believes that if you want to supplement, you should be doing so with products made from complex and natural whole foods, which the body can recognize and utilize as food, rather than with synthetic formulas of isolated vitamins made in chemical factories. Whole Food Today is dedicated to bringing you the finest health products at an incredible value. Nutrient formulas for men and women, super green food formulas made from over 30 vegetables, legumes, sprouts, immunity health formulas, coconut oil, krill oil, and many other products made 100% naturally. Visit us today at www.wholefoodtoday.com or call 1-800-989-9840. That's www.wholefoodtoday.com or call 1-800-989-9840. Whole Food Today offers free shipping to all orders anywhere in the continental U.S. Whole Food Today, empowering people to attain and maintain extraordinary health.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for tuning in here to the Peter Mac Show on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're talking to Dr. Robert Epstein, the author of The Case Against Adolescence, and you can go to the website of that name, www.thecaseagainstadolescence, where he has a lot of other information about the book. And as I said, I think every parent should read this book. So we were just talking about the three forces that really led to the creation of the concept of adolescence prior to the break, Dr. Epstein. Could we talk a bit about the effects of compulsory attendance in school and how that contributed to it?
Well, sure. Yes, that was one of the forces, and I should point out that wherever these forces existed, there were counter forces too. There were people fighting these systems. There were people strongly fighting compulsory education, for example, thinking that, or should say, believing that education should be left up to the families.
Right.
And, in fact, I have so many cases in the book where we look at individuals like Thomas Edison,
right,
who just couldn't be managed in the school system. His parents finally decided to try to homeschool him, and that didn't work too well either. And he finally just went off on his own and, of course, changed the world dramatically.
Right.
You know, the compulsory education system is just not for everyone, and the main thing it teaches, of course, is it teaches young people to hate education.
Right.
That's its main effect. So, I do kind of go into that in detail, the effect that it's had. My main concern these days about compulsory education is that it does trap young people in the world of youth culture. And, of course, the high schools are especially horrendous. They trap people in teen culture. They learn, because of the school system, they learn virtually everything they know from each other. And, of course, the teens are basically being spoon-fed everything they're supposed to know from the media and fashion industries. Mm-hmm. So we have a system that is just absurd. And, in fact, I'm actually thinking now of taking my two younger ones out of the school system and trying to do homeschooling with them to try to get them away from teen culture. I actually cite a study in my book suggesting that American teens, because of our school system, spend 70 hours a week on average with their peers, one way or another.
Right.
If you look at some other countries in different parts of the world, you'll find there are countries where teens spend 5 hours a week with peers.
Right.
And spend most of their time with the people they're going to become, that is, adults. One of the things that people ask me about very frequently when they look at my book is the socialization issue. They say, yeah, but isn't the school system critically important for socialization? Aren't the high schools important so that young people will learn to socialize? And I say, that is so wrong. They're not. We shouldn't be teaching them to socialize with each other.
Right.
They should learn to socialize with the people they're about to become, that is, with adults, not with each other. That's just wrong.
Well, as a professor at a small college here in the Midwest, Park University, I see kids coming out of obviously majority of them are from public schools, and you know their academic skills in many cases are terribly deficient. But of equal concern to me, Dr. Epstein, is the what I could just call this learned obedience. They want to come to, if they're going to miss class, they'll say, well, you know, I have a doctor's excuse. I'll bring you the doctor's excuse. And I tell my students every semester, I say, you're paying for this service. I am providing a service to you. If you want to miss, you can miss. If you buy a movie ticket and you don't show up to the movie, you don't have to go to the owner of the theater and say, I'm sorry, I missed the movie. You know?
Well, you're talking about, again, these days things have gotten so bad. You're talking about young people who are in schools, high schools, where they have metal detectors at the doors, they have guards in any of the big city schools, they have video cameras not only in the classrooms and hallways, but in all of the bathrooms, extremely high security. I mean, these are basically prisons. These are minimum security prisons. They're exactly the same as minimum security prisons.
Right, and you point out that they have twice as many restrictions on them as prisoners and soldiers and 10 times as many restrictions as everyday adults.
That's right. I did some survey research and actually went into a prison here in the San Diego area and then went on to the military base, Camp Pendleton, which is the largest U.S. Marine military base in the country, and actually administered surveys to prisoners and Marines and also to regular adults and to teens, and found absolutely that teens are being subjected to an incredible number of restrictions. I mean, no wonder they're some of them anyway are willing to take risks and do crazy things, because they'd actually have more freedom if they got into prison than they have out there in the real world. And that trend is increasing, as I show in the book, and especially in one of the appendices of the book at the end. That trend is increasing. The number we're increasing the number of restrictions on teens at a very rapid rate, especially now with a lot of high-tech devices, so we can track where they are every minute, watch what they're doing on the computer every minute. There's even a company that makes school uniforms that is planning to release a version of a school uniform that has a built-in GPS tracking device.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
So you have to put yourself in their shoes and say, you know, how would you feel if you had no privacy rights, no property rights?
Right.
Someone was monitoring what you do 24 hours a day.
Well, we're due for another break. We'll be back here in just a minute with Dr. Robert Epstein, and we're talking about the case against adolescents. Stay with us, folks.
Thank you. You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Do you know that you can go solar for under $1,200 now? Hi, this is Ken Solar. As you may have heard by now, I've been designing alternative energy packages for over a decade. The solar power generators that I produce will get you all the solar power you need for your household essentials. Your refrigerator, your freezer, lights, fans, electric blankets, TV, radio, clocks, phones, computers, and a lot more. No gas, no fumes, and they're totally silent. Each solar power generator comes complete with everything you'll need, including the solar panel, a 3,000-watt peak inverter, a step-by-step quick setup sheet, and battery backup. I reached that point in my life where I just didn't want to have to rely on everyone else anymore. You know, power companies, government. Anyway, getting yourself free from the utility grid is a lot easier than you might think. Are you ready to go solar? Give me a call now at 239-677-3073 or order them on my website at a 10% discount on kensolar.com. That's kensolar.com.
Today's energy infrastructure is antiquated and fails to meet the needs and demands of its customers. Our Renewable Energy Solar Program is the first to give you the opportunity to adopt green energy in your home without having to make a huge investment. Our Renewable Energy Solar System converts sunlight directly into usable electricity where utility power and net metering are available. Our grid-connected solar electric system is designed to produce 100% of the energy consumed by you throughout the year that is allowed by net metering laws. It's finally affordable to go solar. There's no system to purchase, no installation costs, no maintenance fees, no permit hassles, no performance worries, and no rate increases. Reserve your system today. Call 866-276-3975. That's 866-276-3975. Or click on the web banner at RBN. Rethink solar and join the solution. Together, we can make a difference.
The Berkeylight's unique design combines the age-old process of microporous filtration coupled with modern state-of-the-art technology and the highest quality materials, bringing you the finest water filter available anywhere. The revolutionary Berkeylight, with its exclusive black Berkey filter elements, remove pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels. Harmful or unwanted chemicals are reduced to below detectable levels. And it reduces nitrates and unhealthy minerals like lead and mercury while leaving the nutritional minerals your body needs. Made of durable Lexan, the material used in making bulletproof glass, the system is durable, rugged, and yet attractive. The Berkeylight is transparent, so there is no guesswork when refilling the system. The water level is always visible. The rechargeable LED lighting system is beautiful as a nightlight and as necessary in emergency situations. Get the Berkeylight, the transparent water filter, for only $259.
Call today, 877-605-9200. That's 877-605-9200.
Hey, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We're speaking with Dr. Robert Epstein, and his book, The Case Against Adolescence, is the subject of our show today, the first hour here. And Dr. Epstein, you went through sort of the history of how adolescence developed and the three forces that led to it. But early on, you mentioned that there are about 100 cultures in the country, in the world, in which teenagers experience almost none of the kinds of problems, the attempted suicide, the drug use, the violent crimes, and so forth, that our teenagers experience. I'm thinking certainly there are certain aspects of our culture that we value more than other cultures, the kind of freedoms and so forth we have here, at least as adults. So let me put a difficult question to you, perhaps. What is it about our culture that leads to, you know, other than just the notion of adolescence that we've all adopted, you know, uncritically until we read your book, what leads to these problems that other cultures don't have, and how can we retain the good aspects of our culture and, you know, sort of clean up or diminish these problems that the teenagers experience?
Well, first of all, Peter, let me point out that there are more than 100 cultures around the world where they're not only is no teen turmoil. These cultures don't even have a word for adolescence. They don't even have the concept.
Wow.
I cite anthropologists in my book who are aware of our concept of adolescence and basically say that it constitutes hubris on our part, saying that adolescence is universal or that there's a teen brain or that type of thing. right. actually found anthropologists in other countries who say that this is we're just dead wrong on this. So, yeah, the question is, what is the bad that we're doing here, and how can we get rid of that and maintain the good? And the bad is that we hold young people back based strictly on age. Some of them can handle it, but some of them get very depressed, get very angry. That's why we have over 5 million teens in counseling right now. And
wow.
As of 2 or 3 years ago, we passed a terrible threshold. We're now spending more money on psychoactive drugs for teens than on all other prescription drugs combined, and that includes antibiotics and acne medication.
Wow.
So we passed that threshold a few years ago, and we're moving further in that direction. We have suicide is the third leading cause of death among teens in the U.S. We have serious trouble. We have more than 7 million teen binge drinkers. More than 80% of teens in the U.S. have gambled within the last month.
Mm-hmm.
And parents who think this is not true, you are deluding yourselves, because it turns out that the harder a parent is on a teen, the more these problems just get driven underground.
Mm-hmm.
I've interviewed a prominent therapist who work with families and who work with teens, who basically try to explain this to parents over and over and over again, that basically where a young person feels infantilized, feels he or he has no control, that what happens is the problems get driven underground. The parents just become less and less aware of what's actually going on. So how do you begin to fix this? Well, you begin to fix this by providing legitimate ways for young people to join the adult world, by providing incentives and opportunities for young people to join the adult world just as soon as they are ready in one or more areas. And I have a plan that's mapped out toward the end of the book, which explains how in detail this can be done. But the key is to begin to look at competence rather than age. Exactly as we're now doing to a large extent with elderly people. It took us long enough, but we're finally focusing less on age and more on, competence. What can you do?
Right.
If you can do something, keep doing it. And we have to start doing that across the whole age range, and especially with young people, where we don't do that at all. We automatically dismiss all young people just because they're under a certain age. And that's wrong, and as I say, not only does tremendous harm, but it's a serious violation of basic civil rights.
Right. You obviously, as a PhD in psychology, studied G.E. Stanley Hall, and I had a course in child development and in graduate school, and he had this notion, and I was pleased to see it in your book, ontogeny recapitulates phylogeny.
Yes,
which
yes.
is a mouthful, but since he is at the core of the creation of this concept of adolescence, maybe you could spend a couple minutes explaining what that means and just how influential he was in producing this belief that is so pervasive.
Yes, so let me point out, first of all, that I was a professor most of my career, and when I got my doctorate at Harvard years ago, I had two specialties. One of them was learning and motivation, and the other was history of psychology, and I that's pretty rare. Most people don't study the history of their own field. They don't specialize in it.
Right.
And I've actually read Paul's massive two-volume book published in 1904 called Adolescence, and I've read it very carefully in preparing my own book. And, Hall was definitely a smart man and an innovator, but he was misled by what was around him in the late 1800s by literally thousands of young people being on the streets, jobless, during the rapid industrialization of America. And he just had some wrong ideas. He did not look at teens in other cultures. He just got it into his head that since a lot of teens were in turmoil at that particular time, post-Civil War America, that it's inevitable, that that's an inevitable stage of life. He wasn't looking back in history. He wasn't looking at other cultures. He was just looking around him. And this is a perfect case where, someone just can't see the forest for the trees.
Right.
And he also picked up this absolutely stupid idea that was current in biology at the time. Ontogeny recapitulates phylogeny, which means that what happens in the personal growth of an individual mimics what happens in evolution. And he thought that this stage of turmoil of teens was mimicking a time in our past when we were savages.
Mm-hmm.
That was his idea. But it turns out that that idea in biology was completely thrown out by the 1930s, totally thrown out. But the psychologists didn't get the message.
Uh-huh.
And they still believe that ontogeny recapitulates phylogeny, even though, again, the biologists completely threw out. I mean, they threw it out so completely, it basically doesn't have any merit whatsoever. It was a popular idea in biology for a couple of decades, and it's, boom, gone.
Right.
But Hall adopted it, the psychologists adopted it, and they still believe it to this day, and it's absolutely wrong. There is nothing inevitable about adolescence, nothing. Just look in history, look around the world right now. There's nothing inevitable about it. Hall was wrong.
That's amazing. And then you go on to discuss the intellectual competencies of young people, and you have several graphs in your book which show that those peak at a time, in the early teens, commensurate with Piaget's notion of formal operational thinking, and then there's a slow decline into adulthood after that. And yet we tend to think, and I have found myself doing this as recently as a few weeks before reading your book, talking to other adults who have children and saying, well, they just don't reason yet well. They just don't understand their mortality.
Yes.
And that sort of thing.
Oh, I know. Believe me, as I say, I am a father, so I understand that reasoning. But you know what? When I actually looked carefully at this matter and developed a competency test, a very comprehensive competency test with Diane Dumas, the former doctoral student of mine, which now thousands of people have taken. In fact, people can go online and take it for free. You go to howadultareyou.com. That's howadultareyou.com. You can take the test for free now online. And basically, I found out I was wrong, that these notions we have that young people are somehow incompetent intellectually is absolutely dead wrong. And if you think about this from an evolutionary standpoint, you realize, now wait a minute, we probably must be very competent shortly after puberty, because
right.
throughout human history, that's when we had our children.
Right.
That's when we had to be extremely competent. And fact is, we didn't have to be competent much longer after that, maybe just 10, 15 years at the most. After that, evolution doesn't care about us anymore.
Right.
Once we have the kids and keep them alive long enough for them to have kids, evolution doesn't care about us at all.
Right.
And sure enough, if you look at the data, and this is not a book of my opinion, this is a book of data, you find that our abilities peak, generally speaking, between ages 13 and 15. Perceptual abilities, memory abilities, intellectual abilities, reasoning abilities, raw scores on IQ tests, that's when they peak. And the kicker is, that's also when brain size is largest. It peaks around age 14, and by the time we're age 70, our brain has shrunk to the size it was when we were about 3 years old.
Wow.
So no matter how competent you think you are, you were a lot more competent in your early and mid-teens.
Right.
You've been declining ever since. It's
right.
depressing. And believe me, that was so depressing for
right.
me to research this and bring together information from several fields that no one's ever brought together before. And when I began to create those graphs and saw that dramatic, dramatic pattern, believe me, I was not happy about that, because I'm in my 50s. I was very unhappy.
We're all aging. I like to believe, though, that we can develop strategies that may at least partially offset the physiological decline of our brains in terms of, skills and memory skills and whatnot.
Well, we can compensate to some extent for some period of time, but eventually, we lose the battle.
Sure.
In fact, I had on my own radio show, which is on Sirius Satellite Radio, I had on a man, a professor in New York, who studies intellectual decline in aging, and he's been making money lately by, selling products and services to try to keep keep yourself, you know, mentally fit and so on. But basically, you know, even he said, yes, the decline is inevitable. You might be able to put it off slightly.
Right.
You know, you just can't fight it. And the fact is, the peak is so huge in the early and mid-teens. I'll give you just a quick example, memory. This is one that I learned about in researching the book. If you want to look at memory ability, you look at something called incidental memory, memory that just occurs automatically without any work on anyone's part, okay? And teens have superb incidental memory. By the time you're in your 40s and 50s, 60s, you have almost none. You have to work to remember things. Simplest study ever done to show that, just ask people of all different ages exiting movie theaters to say what happened in the movie. And sure enough, young people remember an incredible amount of detail about a movie just automatically without even trying. Elderly people remember almost nothing. And so again, this was a shock to me, but even though we can compensate for the decline is enormous. And again, we have to begin to look at teens based on competence,
right?
Not based on age, not dismiss them all simply because they're under a certain age. But begin to look at them as individuals. This is America. We treasure the individual. We admire the individual.
Right.
And when it comes to teens, we've lost sight of some of our most basic values.
Absolutely. And then you continue on in your book and you talk about, and I found this also equally fascinating, amid, you know, inside a book that was fascinating, about young people in love and their ability to make decisions regarding love. And again, my response prior to that, Dr. Epstein, is they don't know what they're getting into. People make decisions to get married at 19, 20, 21. They don't understand what we as adults understand about the complexity of life and how people change and so forth. They're just, for the most part, not ready to make such a lifelong decision at that point. But once again, your research tends to show that that's not the case, right?
Again, this was a shock to me. Yeah, this is Chapter 8, which is Young People Can Love. It was a total shock to me when I began to look at this carefully. In fact, one of the biggest shocks was just looking at census data on divorce. It turns out that young men who marry in their teens have a lower divorce rate than young men who marry in their 20s. For females, the divorce rate's about the same.
Right.
Overall, people who marry very young have a slightly higher divorce rate than people who marry when they're older, but it's not that much higher. And people who've actually looked at the emotional state of young people who are in love have also been shocked to find that the love experienced by a young person is exactly the same as the love experienced by an adult. There's no, this idea that it's all puppy love is poppycock. It's absolutely wrong, absolutely wrong. And yet, look what we have done, you see? We've isolated millions of young people from adults, saying you're incapable of loving, incapable of forming stable relationships.
Right.
And we've got them almost like cattle, stuck together in pens we call high school. So sure enough, their relationships end up being unstable. We give them absurd role models like Lindsay Lohan and Britney Spears.
Right.
Instead of having them socialize with adults, giving them excellent role models of, adults in stable relationships, we house them with each other and give them stupid role models.
Right.
Yeah, we're doing everything we can to bring out their worst rather than bringing out their best.
Right. Well, and I was struck by this recount of an incident that you have on page 216, and I won't ask you to go to that right away, but it's about a teacher who became sexually involved with a 14-year-old student, and I'll encourage people, of course, to buy the book and read about that and the absurd situation. But the reason that struck me is so relevant and important is I want to share with you, Dr. Epstein, and the listeners, something that I learned recently. A friend of mine is an attorney, and a young man, age 19, came to him, and this man was questioned by police because he had kissed and fondled the breast of a 13-year-old girl, okay? Not a good thing to be happening, to be sure. But my friend, who's an attorney, looked up the law that this 19-year-old man could be charged with. And he could have been charged with, now fortunately he wasn't, he's charged with a lesser charge, but he could have been charged with lewd and lascivious behavior, okay? And this is in the state of Kansas right next to me. Now I'm going to ask you, Dr. Epstein, to venture a guess as to what the penalty could be for this, well, would be for this young man if he were charged with that particular crime in the state of Kansas, what the penalty would be that is legislated by the state of Kansas, and the judge would have no latitude in backing off from that. What do you think the penalty would be?
Oh, I would guess 20 years in prison.
Life in prison with a minimum time of parole of 25 years.
Yeah.
Now, think about it. I'm sitting there thinking, a 13-year-old girl, okay, this is not good behavior to be going on, to be sure. But, I mean, we're treating this 13-year-old like she is completely helpless and that she's damaged forever.
Well, for most of human history, that's when people got married. That's when
right.
Mary also had Jesus. So,
right. Stay with us, folks. We'll be back for the last 10 minutes with Dr. Epstein. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The ideology powering the Democrats and Republicans is not liberalism or conservatism, but globalism. Globalists are concerned with what's good for big business and the American empire instead of what's fair for the American people. The only antidote to the poison of globalism is nationalism. Start reading the Nationalist Times each month. The Nationalist Times promotes a common sense, intelligent, and passionate alternative to the reigning party line. Published monthly since 1985, the Nationalist Times is a 20-page newspaper featuring outstanding writers and columnists who don't believe in taboos or sacred cows. Be one of the many thousands of loyal readers of the Nationalist Times. Subscribe now to the Nationalist Times. Just $19 for 1 year. That's 50% off the regular price. Send your $19 subscription to the Nationalist Times, P.O. Box 426, Allison Park, PA 15101. That's the Nationalist Times, P.O. Box 426, Allison Park, PA 15101. Or subscribe online at our website, www.anu.org.
Introducing the new Blueprint Water Unit. This one-of-a-kind water technology uses natural frequencies to clean harmful toxins from your drinking water. We start with one of the best four-stage reverse osmosis systems. Then we retrofit the Blueprint Water System with twin vortices. This primary technology is designed to clear harmful water memory. We then imprint blueprint frequencies harmonic to the human body. This is the only known living water recreated by live essence infusion. According to reports from users, the water helps balance the body's internal pH. Others have said the water has helped promote weight loss through detoxification. This water is so good, your body begins to crave its healthy input. For more information, call Natural Solution toll-free at 866-885-6625. That's 866-885-6625. Once again, that's 866-885-6625.
Do you know that you can go solar for under $1,200 now? Hi, this is Ken Solar. As you may have heard by now, I've been designing alternative energy packages for over a decade. The solar powered generators that I produce will get you all the solar power you need for your household essentials. Your refrigerator, your freezer, lights, fans, electric blankets, TV, radio, clocks, phones, computers, and a lot more. No gas, no fumes, and they're totally silent. Each solar-powered generator comes complete with everything you'll need, including the solar panel, a 3,000-watt peak inverter, a step-by-step quick setup sheet, and battery backup. I reached that point in my life where I just didn't want to have to rely on everyone else anymore. You know, power companies, government. Anyway, getting yourself free from the utility grid is a lot easier than you might think. Are you ready to go solar? Give me a call now at 239-677-3073 or order them on my website at a 10% discount on kensolar.com. That's kensolar.com.
Hey, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for tuning in to the Peter Mac Show. This is the Republic Broadcasting Network, and my special guest on the line with me today is Dr. Robert Epstein, author of the book, The Case Against Adolescence, and you can go to www.thecaseagainstadolescence and learn more about the book, and also there's a test on adultness that you can take, and Dr. Epstein, could you give the URL out for that again?
Yes, first of all, the book is at thecaseagainstadolescence.com. You do need the .com. And the test is at howadultareyou.com, and it's totally free. It's a very comprehensive test of adultness.
Right. So then in the as we were just talking about, the ramifications of considering people that are teenagers as, you know, really incompetent in many ways, and then suddenly we assume they're competent at 18 or 21 or whatever, although as you point out in the book, there's a push legislatively and in other ways to sort of extend adolescence even beyond what it, you know, sort of currently is sort of, you know, the general thinking of the end point of that. But the data just continues to show that people are capable, they're capable of being responsible, they're capable of making decisions about whom to marry, when to marry, and other, you know, very life-changing kinds of decisions that we just assume they're not capable of making, at least until they're of quote-unquote legal age.
Yes, and I see we're running short on time, but let me just get to my bottom line, and that is looking at competency. And you do this with competency tests. And, you know, there was a time when you didn't have to take a test to drive a car or to go fishing or hunting or become an electrician or plumber, but eventually, as a society, we've moved toward evaluating competence, and you have to take tests and get licenses to do a lot of things in our culture. And that's what we need to do for young people, is just create a very small number of competency tests, and as soon as a young person says, I'm ready, I want to see if I can enter the adult world in this way, and I want to get privacy rights or property rights or be able to start a business or be able to enter the working world instead of going to school, we make a test available. If that young person can show that he or she is as competent as at least half of all adults, that's the standard I would use.
Right.
Then we say, okay, you've got it. You've got that right. And that should be true for emancipation as well. And I think that's the solution. And you'd find that millions of people, of young people, would try to take these tests and try to escape from the world of teen culture. If you gave them the opportunity to enter the adult world, they would try to do so by the millions. They would try to become more adult-like. It would change our relationship with young people instead of it being adversarial.
Right.
It would be much more cooperative because they want to join us. And believe me, they will try to do it, as they say, by the millions if we let them.
Right. Well, just take the example of obtaining a driver's license. I got mine in this state here at 16. I know my nephew is now going through the process. He's 15 and a half in Maryland, but the process is much more rigorous, and I think it's also somewhat age-dependent there. But if you take what you have shown in your book about cognitive and perceptual capabilities, young people are going to have quicker reflexes than certainly people, you know, in their 60s, 70s, and 80s, and yet we keep them out of driving, and we allow people at the other end of the age spectrum to drive whose capabilities, from a physiological standpoint, in some cases ought to be questioned, don't you think?
Oh, it's completely stupid, and we have a new law in California that bans young people, only young people, not older people, but bans all young people from using cell phones in cars. It's the older people who should be banned.
Right. Well, we're down to the end of the line, as you noted there, and so let's just make sure people know how to get a hold of the book and also go to your website again.
Okay, thecaseagainstadolescence.com. My personal website is drepstein.com.
Great. And the test again for adultness was what?
Howadultareyou.com.
Howadultareyou.com. Thank you very much, Dr. Epstein, for being on. And again, for what it's worth, I would encourage anybody who is a parent to read the book.
Thank you, Peter.
Thank you. Folks, we'll be back. Stay with us for the second half of the show. I'll switch gears a little bit, so stay with us right here at the Republic Broadcasting Network. With